So, today talking to you about some unconventional forages, prefaces with I am an extension educator, and so why would I bother with looking at extending the grazing season and using some unconventional forages when my colleagues say just use the pasture? That's because my producers needed some extra answers as to how to deal within their situation, what was going to work for them. So today I'm going to talk to you about some of the 3 years of some on-farm trials working with a producer, and at the same time that we are doing that, looking at the second thing that we'll cover is maximizing spring and summer grazing of some of the winter cereals. We utilized those on the on-farm, but I also did replicated trials at the same time. And then we've just started into the last couple of years using annual forages for summer, fall, and winter grazing and some replicated trials. We had done it previously on the on-farm trials, but not on a replicated basis. So for us, we really need to extend the grazing season because for my producers, this is a huge cost. We live in the dairy-producing area of southern Idaho, and whenever the dairies want hay and corn, they get it and they change the price of it. So if you have beef and sheep producers, they really need some low-cost livestock feed for during the winter. We utilized what we had termed management intensive grazing from what I saw this morning. We actually used strip stocking is what we utilized to make it more correct in terms that are across the board. Typically, we use the hay, the forage, and the fat banks on our livestock operations. Today, we are going to focus on the forage bank. Typically, we would utilize the perennial forage or pastures. But we need to do more and be a little bit more effective at stockpiled winter pasture or stockpiled forages. And we've also put into play the unconventional forages for some of my producers that would just as soon be doing raising livestock. They're becoming a little bit more farmers out of necessity of what we've had to face. So they do spring, summer, and winter for the forages. Here you can see a mix of some of the commodities that we used on farm during the 3 years. Teff, pro-millet, and turnips and oats. We also stockpiled tall fescue that went along with the turnips. So this is to show you some idea. See if this mouse, which mouse actually moves? Does this one? Where is it? There it is. Okay, thank you. Okay, so here on your x-axis, you have just the months of the year, January to December. And then on the y-axis, so that we could standardize it, we just looked at the production for this farm and these livestock, and it's on when we had the most demand for the feed and the highest nutritional quality of forage that we needed. So if you look at the green in this case is hay. The producer half of January, February, and March was feeding hay. This is better than what we had done before. We would like it to be none, but it is better than what we had before. If you look at the annual forages are here in blue, those are all of our unconventional forages that we utilized in the mix. So we utilized those in January, again in April, so that we had our winter cereals that we could use before our perennial pastures were ready. And then we used them exclusively in August. We used Teff was the primary one that we used in August. And then again in October, November, December, we utilized pearl millet and turnips. And we also utilized your orange bar here is the stockpiled tall fescue that we utilized along with the turnips. And then the perennials, as I mentioned, we utilize. So we're trying to maximize that forage bank and match it for the particular needs for our area. I realize this isn't going to be the same for everybody. And as we mentioned this morning, they did some of all the interdependence of things and the difference in situations. So this is what we were able to utilize for our producers. So if you look at, for me, I'm not an economist, but for my producers, it's always down to the bottom line. What can we do? What were we able to change? 2007, we extended the grazing days by 19. We started off with 80 head. For what we used on unconventional forages, over hay cost, we saved $6.54 a head. 2008, we had an additional 29 grazing days. We bumped our herd size to 150. We still save $7.09 a head. 2009, we had 39 grazing days. We made a little bit of progress as we were going along. We got a little bit better at it. We were able to nearly triple the livestock production, and we had a savings over hay cost of $11.34 a head. So quite significant that way. I did standardize hay cost at $100 a ton. We had a lot of variability in hay cost up to $200 a ton, but so that we could compare years, I did keep the hay price standard. Okay, so that's a quick summary for you of some of our on-farm trials. Want to go with you a little bit on some of the replicated winter cereal trials that we did. We did do them in a randomized complete block. I'm not going to go through all the methods for you. Just going to go straight to some of the data. The reason that we need to look at these is we have, as was mentioned for the gentleman earlier, we have short irrigation season and short water supplies a lot of times in southern Idaho in our arid environment, and as would be the case with other environments where the water is short. So we did a mix of Chitticale varieties, and we also did a winter barley from Oregon and a Willow Creek winter wheat out of Montana. The reason that I picked these two, and we utilized them in the on-farm trials as well, the Willow Creek winter wheat we did, is because they're both onless. So then they fit in well with the livestock operation. So you see here in 2008, the Triticale far out yields the barley and the Willow Creek winter wheat. It was a drier year, typical of what we usually see. In 2010, we actually have gotten a lot more moisture, and you see that all of our yields were higher. So overall, again, the winter barley and the Willow Creek winter wheat couldn't compare to the Triticale. Okay, but if we want to look at where we're at as far as quality for those and the winter cereals, there's these numbers here, 4 through 9 were Triticale varieties, 11 was your Willow Creek winter wheat, and then your barley in comparison to hay. I standardized, we have standard prices for hay that we can look at over these years, and it was almost $100 a ton. Your cost per ton is on your y-axis. Trying to look at how do these winter cereals compare to alfalfa. So standardized them to 17% crude protein, 143 relative forage quality. And you see that all of the winter cereals, especially our barley, cost less than it would have for the producers to buy hay. So that's a good thing. We want them to use the winter cereals. Okay, now, then after that, you start going to the next step. If we're short on irrigation, we have marginal ground, what are we going to do? So we have regrowth potential here. Here you can see the Willow Creek winter wheat and the barley. Huge advantage that I saw in the Willow Creek winter wheat is it does not head out near as quick as the Triticale or the barley. So it's a great alternative for grazing. You have just the opposite on this summer regrowth. We did not replant. This is just regrowth. Our barley and our Willow Creek winter wheat come out towards the top on our yield in both years. The Triticale did not regrow quite as well. This variety did do pretty good in 2010. Okay, if we look at our forage quality again, you see on this regrowth, the barley and the Willow Creek winter wheat are beating out the others. Okay, so next we go to some of the annual forages. We are in our second year of looking at it with annual forages that we're utilizing on a randomized complete block design. We're utilizing them for summer and fall grazing and also for stockpiling for winter grazing. You can see we're using sorghum Sudan grass, some rapeseed, teff, sorghum, pearl millet, hairy vetch, and turnips, just so you can have a reference of what they look like. This is our first year of data. We have collected a second year, but didn't have it in time to report to you. So this is just a preliminary to give you an idea of what we're looking at and the varieties compared to each other. Our sorghums, our sorghum Sudan grass, our pearl millet all did the best as far as our yield. We start declining substantially with our teff and our oats. These were planted in June and harvested in September. Then if you continue on down, our chickling vetch, here's our yield, our nether teff variety. Then you see our rapeseed and our turnips and our hairy vetch. So they have gone down quite significantly from the 11 tons per acre for the sorghum Sudan grass. Here's your hairy vetch, our purple top turnips, our rape, and then this is our chickling vetch. We were trying to pick a mix of different legumes that we could put into the pasture for grazing that would be able to increase the feed value, and these definitely did that. If you look at the quality of these, again, you have your protein and the ones that yielded the best, then you're going to have your nutritional value, your nutritive value that is less in this case, as you can see there. And then if you go with the varieties that are doing less on yield, then those are the ones that are giving a higher nutritive value for the livestock. So our chickling vetch, 17%, rapeseed, 16%, and our turnips between 14.5% and 17%, and hairy vetch at 20.5%. One caution here to look at that we discovered is with the rapeseed and the turnips, you have the relative forage quality that is very high, too high if you're going to be feeding them alone. Also, other issues that I would be really concerned about would be nitrate issues with those varieties. So when we did them on the on-farm trials, we did strip graze, you know, where we're doing strips of the top stockpiled tall fescue along with the turnips. If you could not do that in your system, would be suggested that you look at a mix when you plant them, and that it actually can be a little bit too hot. So this just here shows you a difference in some of the biomasses. These are chickling vetch, hairy vetch, rapeseed, and then a sorghum. One of the things that the producer really liked about the pearl millet is there's no prussic acid issues like there is with sorghum Sudan grass. And we did not have nitrate issues, so they could graze it at any point in time. We do have sorghum Sudan grass on that producer's field this year, and with the biomass production that we can get off of it, they are willing to try and watch that prussic acid. Okay, pearl millet, an advantage of it, you can graze it early after a month. You can graze it in August or September for us. You can graze it in October, or you can graze it in December. We were trying to maximize the amount of height that we could get with the pearl millet. It does stay standing while it's amongst the snow. So we did, when we went to this level, we did have to supplement the cattle and the sheep with protein supplements if we waited that long. So to summarize it up for you, if we look at these unconventional forages for what we have found so far, they help us because they help fill a niche. When we have cool season grasses and they're not performing in the middle of the summer, or they're not there early enough, they're not there late enough, these unconventional forages fit in. As you can see, they can be highly palatable and have very good nutritional value for the livestock. We do have a concern of using less water. Anything that we can do to minimize our irrigation water use is advantageous. They can be less expensive than hay, as I've showed you. One example with the turnips in the producer's field is it was only 1.3% the cost of what it would have been for hay. So that's a huge savings for them. The other advantage, we saw a break in the pasture weed cycles with some of the poor areas we had, and then utilizing the manure without having to have the hauling costs. They didn't have to go to a feedlot. They were then out on the pasture and putting that manure and that those nutrients and that soil fertility back into place. So those were good ideas. So if you were going to plant and you're ready to get going, my suggestions to you for this spring would be think about winter or spring cereals. Any of the vetches, our chickling vetch and hairy vetch in combination with the cereals would be great. During the summer, some of your warm season annuals, or the vetch or rapeseed in combination with the teff or the pearl millet. Anytime they're really easy for the producers to grow in marginal ground, then those are the ones I was looking for, and these fit. They fit. In early fall, turnips or rapeseed or vetch in combination with the winter cereals are a great option. So I'll take questions if there's time.
We have time for a couple questions.
keep in mind what I showed you here. This is just for stockpiled. One of the things that we're going to be going forward with is taking that sorghum Sudan grass, now that my producers have seen it, and I had a forage field day this year. Now that they've seen it, they're willing to say, oh yeah, maybe we do want to look at it. So that was for the whole season. Forage quality, obviously, with any of the forages is going to go down with time as they mature. So we could have gotten much more optimal forage quality out of it if we could have grazed it sooner. Now I've at least got them started. So we're headed that direction. Another question? It's called AC Green Fix, commonly that you would see in the literature, and it supposedly fixes a huge amount of nitrogen. So that was why I went with that one. It's kind of, it actually gets a little pea pod on it, the peas. I've eaten them. They're quite sweet and good. I can see why the livestock like them. I haven't. Photosunburn. Okay. We did not at this point in time. My producer has actually tried to kill the hairy vetch, and the livestock have gone after it intensively, and they absolutely love it. No issues.